a Indian mantra. But I know my my evolution has come up more from an awareness of indwelling spirit. And pretty much that's, I've come to see that there's no self, invisible, no self. But I wondered, you know, you talk a lot about mantra, but I feel that when I go off and identify, I know it right away, and I breathe and I let go and I sink down into selfless self pretty easily. But I don't know. What do you think? I've never had mantra. And I know that's what all of you who have been, who've gotten your mantra from what's his name, Rakakant or whatever. Ramakant. Yeah. So what do you think? Do you think that I should have a mantra? Would you give me a mantra?
Mantra has to be done in person. It's not something that can be done over Zoom. There were a few folks who had actually on YouTube had asked about, you know, could we have mantra or whatever? And maybe if that occurs after the whole COVID situation, we can look into this. But Maharaj also always says, you know, if you don't have the mantra of the lineage, then Aham Brahmasmi, or Shivoham, Soham. There are many mantras out there. The main thing is that you stick with one, and the mantra is there basically to erase illusory concepts so that you can know yourself in a real sense. From what you're speaking, you're able to remain with yourself or basically find yourself within any experience and be there.
Yes.
So then from that point, concentrating, as Maharaj would say, concentrate on the concentrator until the concentrator dissolves within the concentration. We could say it also as like, in any moment, you can just kind of, instead of seeing outward, you're basically seeing from the center of that seeing. That concentration center. And you could say you place your attention inwardly in that kind of source of where the attention is coming. Mm-hmm. And hold, and then release.
Mm-hmm.
So the attention is on that just I, that subtle presence. And then it's released. And that's that, you know, like Maharaj says, that's sort of what they call samadhi, where you're definitely, there's no body, there's no mind, there's no nothing. You're just in that awareness of awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Without awareness being separate from anything, because there's nothing. Like there, you see from this place of seeing, directing all the attention. So that is a deliberate act, taking the attention and directing it to that source. And you're seeing, but you're not really registering the seeing outwardly. You're registering the source of seeing, or that source of everything, and all the attention is directed there, and then the attention is released.
Okay. Yes, that's helpful. No, I went to India to be in the energy of Ramana because from an early age, I've had like a vacuum that pulls me into a deep silence. And Ramana had been silent for like 17 years or so before he started speaking again. So I felt like I wanted to be in his space. And I felt because of the attention and the silence that has always been like a vacuum often with me. And with Ramana, when someone would ask him a question, he would just go into silence. And then the question and the questioner eventually would disappear. And so I've always been drawn that way. Maybe silence has been my mantra a lot of my life.
Yeah, and the main, you know, the busy mind, if you're not experiencing the busy mind,
I'm not.
You're not. The main thing is that because of long association with the body, there's an identification with the body, and the flow of thoughts is kind of the pressurizer that keeps the concept of being within a body or being a body, because all the flow of thoughts are about the external world that you're seeing. You know, there's no thoughts about that you are. There's only thoughts about this external experiencing.
Yeah.
And so if you're remaining with your selfless self, then there is no thought process about the external because you're just there.
I'm not bothered by a whole lot of thoughts anymore.
There you go. And see, Maharaj will say, in the beginning, it's quite necessary to erase these illusory thoughts, the broom. You keep brooming these leaves out the door, you know, or like he says, the antivirus software. The virus is, I am somebody in a world. I need to do X, Y, Z. These are my experiences. I have a lifespan. I was born. I will die. What happens to me when I die? All this separating. All these thoughts bringing the sense of being an individual that all these things can be happening to. But the mantra will slowly, silently, and permanently erase the illusory concepts, as Maharaj says, the ash. And once the ash is removed, fire is burning brightly. And that fire is that sense of presence, that I am, that sense of existence, the just I. You could say the witness of the silence, whatever you want to call it. There you remain. Mm-hmm. And you just remain. And the more you go in, as Maharaj would say, deeper and deeper and deeper in your selfless self, spending every moment.
Intoxication of the selfless self, I often feel that. But
absolutely.
But it's kind of, I don't like the idea that when I die, I won't feel that anymore.
Well, the only reason you're feeling that is because you have a body form. You have a cup to dip into the nectar of immortality rather than being the nectar itself. You've created the illusion of separation so that you can dip a cup into the nectar of immortality.
Yes.
And in reality, you are that nectar of immortality.
Yeah. Yes. But then when you die, there's nothing.
But there's no birth, no death.
There's nothing. No. But there is that intoxication of the selfless self that's so wonderful.
Through the illusion.
Through the illusion. Yeah.
Basically, tonight you're dreaming, and you dream that you're in a 5-star hotel being pampered, and you know you're in a nice jacuzzi, you're having nice massage, everything. Oh my God, so wonderful. Then you wake up and you're no longer experiencing those things.
Yeah.
But you know that that was only experienced through the dream state, the illusion.
Yeah.
And in the same way, you have a body now so that you can experience the waking dream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you'll wake up from this waking dream when the body, the essence of, can no longer sustain. And then that's it. But you don't end because you're all of everywhere animating everything. Yeah. So one body is not the end for you. Because if it all ended with just you, then everything would just be all the people everywhere. Like at any time you saw somebody pass away, it would be, boom, that's the end. Like if the selfless self could die or even experience dying, then there would be a serious void, like suddenly just poof. But it's not like that because you're not this individual. This body form, Elizabeth, will pass away, will deteriorate, so to speak, and go back to the five elements. But the source that's holding Elizabeth, or pretending to be Elizabeth so that you can see inside this illusory existence, is not going anywhere.
No.
The world does not disappear from you. You are just no longer seeing the world through the eyes of Elizabeth.
But I won't have any consciousness at all.
Well, you are the consciousness.
Selfless self anymore.
You mean like you won't have the illusion of separation?
Correct. There's no.
What you're picking up.
But there's no separation right now.
Right.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I just.
No. I realize that, but I enjoy the experience of the intoxication of selfless self. I enjoy that. Someone is enjoying it. That someone will be no more.
No, that's the enjoyer will still be there. There will just not be the illusion of enjoyment.
Well,
this is not. Everything is not.
Yeah.
Nothing is.
Yes.
Presence is all there is. This is everywhere in everything. It's only when I sit there and I say, when John is no longer experiencing this, but John is just a character.
Yes. Yeah.
So not even not is not.
Well, selfless self is producing all these things you're seeing. The entire world is projected on your presence, but it's not Elizabeth's presence. It's presence.
Present.
And Elizabeth is one of those projections, but you're the projector.
Yeah. One of the things I heard you say in one of the talks, I've been listening back over a lot of the talks, just kind of dipping into a lot of the talks lately, just been enjoyable. But one of the things I heard recently, when you know you're not an object, there's no time. I like that.
Oh, yeah. Have time, you have to have an object within space to measure time. When you know you're not an object, there is no time.
No, I like that. Yeah, that was helpful. Yeah. Well, one time I said to you, well, when I'm not feeling any sense of separation at all, isn't that what it's going to be like on the other side? And you said, no, that's not it.
Because there would be no awareness of
that. There would be no awareness of that, yeah.
Yeah, you're all that is. The only reason that there's the illusion of separation now is because, like Maharaj says, spirit clicked with the body and you say, I.
Yeah.
Prior to this, there's no knowing of this I. Prior to beingness, 150 years ago, how were you? Well, you were, because again, just like you can say in nighttime, when you wake up in the morning, well, who experiences waking up? That which was always awake, that which never sleeps. The formless presence experiencing in the illusory existence, we say consciousness, because as soon as the sense of existence occurs, an illusory world appears, whether it be the waking consciousness or the dream consciousness. The only separation of waking and dream is I am waking, I am now awake, and I am now dreaming. But in order to wake up, there's a constant. Something is there Otherwise, if it just disappeared, there'd be no experiencing waking up. So in the same way, the only thing separating the waking state and the dream state is the idea, I am awake or I am dreaming. And neither is actually true, because both are occurring. They're projections within the consciousness, if you want to call it consciousness, projections on your presence. And again, like Maharaj says, you are the projector. Don't get caught up in the projections. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned about Ramana Maharshi, the answer, the question and the answer would be the same, because the silence was just, there is no question and answer. It's just this deep, but yes. That's your own selfless self.
Yes.
The two bodies, you and Ramana Maharshi, as you're seeing, Ramana Maharshi is just presence and absolutely knowing completely, this is, I am that. And now here is that same presence. We're still holding on to the conceptual identity of, I'm Elizabeth, going to Ramana Maharshi to experience the presence, the silence, the deep kind of experience of that.
Yeah.
And yet it's that's experiencing that through the form of Elizabeth.
Yes. When I was a child, I felt, with the looking into the sky and all that, I felt that deep vastness. And it was kind of a glimpse of knowing who I was, really, that just would be kind of overwhelming sometimes as a child.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for you as formless presence to maintain the illusion of separation.
Mm-hmm.
Even, and that's why I think Nisargadatta Maharaj says, like, in swoon, or faint, or something like this, you can't hold this illusory concept of being an individual for a very long time. Even at nighttime, if you're dreaming, you're not going to dream probably your exact same body or your exact same look, or maybe you change up the way the world looks or whatever, because it takes a lot of effort to keep pretending that you are something other.
Mm-hmm.
There is no other.
There is no other because there is no you. As soon as I have the concept that I'm somebody else, then I see other people. But when there's no concept of me, there's seeing, but there's not a heavy seeing of, oh, there's a seer seeing something. No, there's just seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's not even, there's no, when we're in a body with a mind, we have an idea of what nothingness would be or what not is, but that's not it.
Well, you're there. That's it. In body form, so that I am that.
Who could have this idea of what is not?
Well, because again, you have a body form. You can meditate and sit there and feel that, okay, this subtle sense of presence, just I. And now I know that's there, whether this body's here or not. Or like Nisargadatta Maharaj has said, close your eyes, and they're still seeing. Like your physical eyes are closed, so tell me how you're seeing. And then the more you remain in this kind of seeing of nothingness, so to speak, you absolutely know I am not body. And then from the source of that attention, when the attention is placed on that source, there's nothing. And there's no illusory train of thought to try and keep you contained within a body. because you know yourself in a real sense. So the thoughts, like we talked about before, like a black and white TV, you're seeing the world in color. You say, well, you know what? These thoughts, they really don't apply at all. So why am I going to go chasing them? I'm not. I'm just going to remain with my selfless self. And that selfless self intoxication that's felt through the body, because you now have a cup that you can dip into this nectar of immortality and just bask in the glory of being. But knowing that this is a temporary thing. Why is it temporary? Because this feeling came along with the body.
Mm-hmm.
And the body is a temporary thing. It's on a lease, as Maharaj would say. It's on loan from the five elements. I'm sorry, Rami.
So here, the being, the consciousness that is imposed with the another concept as self. So these on this in beingness, right? The thoughts are coming, and because of these thoughts are only we are, you know, talking about the experiences, or we are able to perceive the experiences through thoughts and the sensations. Now, here I am somebody is another idea, that is thought. Now, thought would realize, or, you know, that it is no longer self, right? That means that is just beingness. Again, that has also has to gone. That's what you're saying, if I understand correctly.
Well, and again, if we try to intellectualize or we try to figure it out with the mind, we're using the mind, ego, intellect to try and figure out that which is prior to mind, ego, intellect. When you remain with your selfless self, you're prior to mind, ego, intellect. So you're less likely to try and use those instruments that came along with the body, because those instruments can only produce so-called knowledge of body-based existence. And you're prior to body. So anytime that we try to use logic and mind, ego, intellect, that mind, ego, intellect is like, it's been fed the information, you know, just like the internet. The internet has all the answers you could ever have, but it's fed in to by certain people and you know, all the conglomeration. So the same with the mind, ego, intellect. All the information that it can spit back to you has been fed to it through the body-based illusion of existence. So it cannot help you at all. To a certain point, when you become a seeker and you say, okay, I want to seek, then you read these books and you learn these different things, and then all of this is only telling you, experience yourself directly for yourself. Then you'll have no more questions. You'll have no more figuring it out. You won't use mind, ego, intellect. And that's when the mind basically is like, okay, well, end of my game, because I can no longer play with you. Because you've figured out your own self. You'll remain with your selfless self. And everything that I give to you is based on the body-based illusion. Master's told you you're not body. You've now experienced this for yourself directly, that you're not body. So the mind is absolutely useless. And all the body-based knowledge that got you to that point can now be thrown away, because it's done its job. And now you worship the selfless self. You worship the master by remaining with your selfless self. Selfless self devotion, which, as we were mentioning, the reward is intense selfless self-intoxication. So here I am, bowing to my selfless self, worshiping that selfless self, that direct experience, and gaining this intense selfless self-intoxication, this Satchitananda, if you want to call it that. And all of that is only available because of this body form. Because in reality, the more that you turn and remain with your selfless self, you will see there's no experience, no experiencer. Nothing's there. Like, and that you are. And the only reason you even know you are is because of this body form, that you can experience this sense of presence, this I am, or this I exist. Otherwise, you are existence without the knowledge of knowing I exist, because there's nothing other above in which to measure yourself.
I would like to tell one thing happened, but I don't have any substantial evidence to attribute this experience or understanding happened because of the mantra. But my conviction is that it is because of the mantra. So what happened was, just somehow, you know, it stuck during, you know, one day that in a few days ago. Whatever is being experienced, right, that has to be seen thoroughly. So that's what the one idea came up. Then suddenly I was just thinking, there was thought like, we wear clothes, but you know, if this investigation has to go deep, means it has to be seen completely, whatever is happening in the very moment. So with that idea, try to understand how I wear the clothes. Okay, then okay, initially what is operating here? Okay, there is generally immediate thought or knowledge came that okay, to protect from the seasons. But if again, you know, try to go little deep, what is happening here? Then another thing came up like, okay, you know, why am I wearing this size of shirt or this kind of color? I can wear anything, but one way or other way, I'm trying to be identify or, you know, with the people around me. Like, I don't want to look odd, you know, just I want to project this body, you know, belong to that group where I'm surrounded, the culture, the so-called people, you know, I'm surrounded. So that is another thing. And little deep again event, like, you know, okay, I'm choosing this particular color means again on particular day while I was buying this, okay, this one looks good on this body, so this makes me feel happy. So like, you know, this, that was like, you know, altogether a new level understanding for me, at least. You know, this happened after long time Maharaj died. Okay, there was one time, you know, deep understanding, this kind of understanding was there once, but after that, this happened. I would say, you know, before this, right, I have been doing the Naam Mantra in the leisure hours, leisure time, whenever I get time, whenever there is consciously some time, then just chanting. So during that process, this understanding occurred. And after that, you know, I'm able to see many of the experiences a bit deeper than normally. So I feel, you know, mantra is working, you know. I can't say, you know, exactly bring any conclusion like, okay, this is the antecedent, so because of this consequent, you know, understanding is happening. I don't have that, but conviction is mantra works. That's what I would like to say.
Yeah, and the various experiences that are occurring, I think I've talked about before. One time I was sitting with my son and we were in this bouncy house, bouncy land thing, these inflatables, it's called backyard inflatables, and all the kids were running around and jumping up and down. And for a moment, in a flash, there was an understanding that these are all just five elemental bodies running around, and presence is actually animating all of that. And if I could say that the space was the presence, these body forms were totally empty, other than the concepts that the presence was experiencing in each one of these separate bodies. So, and it was like just this flash of, oh, and the understanding. So these moments of understanding, they're good. But remember, Maharaj has said that where all experience ends, there you are. And in the background of every experience, the only reason that an experience is there is you are the background, and you can find yourself in that moment. in the back of any experience, no matter how great the experiences are, because this was right after I came back from India. And to me, it was like a really kind of profound seeing that all these little kids are running around and moms and dads are, and everybody's moving, but in reality, they're just five elemental goo and nothing more. They're shapes. And the presence was animating these shapes and enjoying bouncing on the bouncy house or running around as the kids or whatever. And there was this understanding that there were no individuals, because it was just like as if I was sitting there on the couch dreaming all of this. And knowing that all these kids running around were just occurring within the dream. And therefore, definitely dream consciousness was creating the entire scene. But that's an experience. The main thing is, no matter how good experience or even negative experience, to find yourself, because where all experience ends, there you are. So you find yourself in any moment and remain there. And yes, presence changes bodies just as you change your clothes. It's for, I think they talk about in Bhagavad Gita about forms being raised and destroyed. And the formlessness, the presence is not going anywhere. And you can't even say that it's eternal, because anything to do with time can only be in the body-based illusion.
So sometimes we use mantra to draw attention to self or whatever, or self. And sometimes it just happens kind of by itself, but you still release it because it's still experience.
Well, and the more that you remain with mantra, slowly, silently, and permanently, the illusory concepts are dissolved. And it's quiet mind, you know, a silent mind, and the reflection of selfless self in a blank mind is the sense of presence, the sense of I exist.
So it's then, self.
I'm sorry?
So it's self-released in a way, but not even that. Even that's saying too much.
Well, again, you have the deliberate effort of using the attention. And attention is actually formless also, because there's no form to attention. So you have this concept of using attention and directing that attention to the source of that attention. And it can be done most easily if you're watching television and all these dancing things are going on the TV, and then suddenly you're more remaining with the seeing, but still seeing these things outwardly, dancing on the television, but you're remaining with the source of seeing, attention on attention, concentrate on the concentrator, and then release the concentration or release the attention. Now there's no experience, no experiencer. You're looking directly at whatever's in front of you, but you're not looking like there's, you're just here. And this is where we talk about scenes coming and going. You're not putting any importance on the scenes. The scenes are just coming and going. You are not coming and going. These scenes are appearing and disappearing before you. And all of life is like that. Maharaj uses the example, pick up the water, take a drink, put it down. Scenes appearing and disappearing. We're not holding on to how long this scene is here or what it means, or because again, the main drawback, and this is why we turn to mantra rather than mind. If we turn to mind, that's a problem, because mind, ego, intellect came along with the body, will produce the output of the illusory existence and all the illusory experiences, and then try to say that that's knowledge. So this is not good. That's why mantra slowly, silently, and permanently erases those. So instead of turning to mind, we turn to mantra. And Maharaj uses the example of the lady who needs to cook. And all her children are bothering her and yanking on her apron and just causing a lot of disturbances. So she gives these children toys, or the mind is given mantra, so that these children can play with the toys and allow mom to cook, or allow the mind to stop chasing you all around the house, you know, to stop all these illusory thoughts about an existence that isn't true. I just noticed, Kathleen, it looks like you froze. Huh. Like in a position of just smiling, but you froze. You're back.
I've been having this problem with my computer. It freezes all the camera. I don't know. I can refresh it like I just did, and it's okay.
At least you were smiling, though. Like, a lot of times you'll see somebody's frozen and be in a little grumpy position or something, but you're smiling. So.
Yeah, it's good old Apple. I've tried to get them to fix it, but they can't, you know, so I had to deal with it.
At that same time, Rami was gone and only Ramakant was here.
Yeah. Rami looks like this little person, and Ramakant is this large person behind him. We all need to have that picture.
Yeah, right.
That is pretty awesome.
Yeah, that is an awesome. That is an awesome picture.
Yes.
So John, it seems like the mantra is, you know, it's nice to have the special mantra, but if you have Aham Brahmasmi, it serves the similar function. I mean, it's like you work with what you have. So if you know, and you know what there are, for this is for Beth, I think I told Trish about this, but there's these beautiful chants on, you know, on YouTube, and it's got all these monks. And they're singing Om So Hum, and it goes on for like an hour, hours. And you can put it on, you know, one of those things and play it, you know, for a long time. And so, you know, you have somebody even to do the mantra for you. You know, you just have to keep your mind, you keep your focus on it.
How do you get that? That might be good for my group.
Do it onto you, go onto YouTube.
Just go on YouTube and look for Om So Hum.
Okay.
And they have these, there's two different ones. And one of them are all wearing red, and another one they're wearing gold. But they're like all these monks, you know, and they're just singing it. It's beautiful.
And there's also like one single guy who sits there in India and sings it. And there's a background, but it's beautiful too. Same mantra.
Yeah, like Maharaj said, any mantra will do if you haven't been given the mantra by the master. And prior to India, I've told this before, I read the book Selfless Self, and then I started to kind of, actually I haven't read the book Selfless Self yet. It hadn't come out yet because I was doing the Mahavakyas, and that was like my kind of evening routine. I would do all the Mahavakyas, and then it was one of them had something in it about yo so soham hamsaha soham asmi. And I said, aha, this is the mantra before Maharaj. And I went around all DC during the day, everything, because see, it's the earnestness. And I truly believed that at that time, this universal presence had presented this yo so soham hamsaha soham asmi. And so I did this, and I was continuously remaining with this. Because when, at least in my experience of searching for the selfless self or searching for the reality or wanting to know the truth, even simple things like on the escalator, I read a book, it was actually Eckhart Tolle's Power of Now, that said, instead of running on the escalator like you do every morning, which I did, just stand there. And as the escalator is going up, you just stand there. And then kind of observe yourself as your mind is running up the escalator and off already to your office, and try to reel that back in. So all of these things, the selfless self is your own self. This entire world is your projection. So as you play inside that projection with the concept of finding yourself, you leave breadcrumbs for yourself. And it's your earnestness as much as, okay, I want to know myself. You know, I remember reading a book about seeing the presence and not understanding what this presence was. And it talked about presence, presence, presence. And I actually would go outside and look at a flower, because this book said there's a presence on the flower, or the flower has a presence. So I sat there and I stared at the flower, trying to see the presence. Well, just that act of slowing down and directing attention, that sort of was it's selfless self-devotion. Before there were the concept or the words selfless self-devotion, it was literally that I must know myself. I really, you know, I'm starting to feel this subtle presence, and I want to know everything about this. I want to know the reality. And that's why by the time I was going to India with Maharaj, I was in the mindset, so to speak, that I'm going to India to allow this body form to fall at the feet of the presence that I've been feeling in the form of Sri Ramakant Maharaj. And I'm going to be able to thank this presence for all that it's done up to this point, and for knowing this sense of presence and surrendering anything that is left of a separate me. Because now I've read the books, I've read the spiritual things, and I understand that I am the problem. This concept of I is everything, but I have the limited understanding that I is this body. So I'm going to Maharaj, who is this formless presence, to surrender that sense of an individual I and merge with the presence by erasing or dissolving the concept I am somebody else. And that's how I approach Maharaj. This is God. The presence that I start to feel, that in my own experience, I was calling a power greater than myself. My understanding of God was this presence. I am now going to India to see this God that's in form, because I still believe I'm in form, feeling the presence. And I'm there to surrender this concept of a me, of an I, to that presence.
Mm-hmm. I was reading this story today about Deklava, the archer who was taught by he made a statue of the master. And it really just occurred to me that, you know, like the person that you should aim the arrow at is yourself. Just basically.
Yes.
Think well, of it, that's basically where you point the arrow.
I told Maharaj, I said, you're my statue.
That
was a powerful kind of seeing when he was talking about Eklava. You're my statue. My internal selfless self is speaking through you because I still have the concept that I'm an individual. So I believe that you're speaking to me, but in reality, you're my statue, that my own selfless self is speaking through.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm learning the art of archery, or in this case, the understanding of selfless self through Maharaj, the statue, but the internal selfless self is actually doing everything.
Yeah.
And Maharaj knows this, but at that time, I believe myself to be someone going to the presence in a body form only because I still believe I'm a body form.
Mm-hmm.
And Maharaj says, if you know yourself as formless, and the master is formless, then there's no separation. Master and disciple are concepts only as long as you believe you're a body. All concepts came along with the body. So any concept I'm holding, I need to see where it's sticking. Oh, that's a sticky concept to the body. And as we mentioned, mind, ego, intellect that came along with the body is producing so-called knowledge through the body-based existence, and you're not body. So you are the answer to all questions.
I read today in Das Boot, chapter 8, subchapter 8 and subchapter 9 are really beautiful. But one sentence stuck with me. He said, illusion appears only in concepts, and reality is a void of concepts. It's just stuck with me so deeply.
All concepts are stuck to the body. Remove the body and there's no place for a concept. Even we talked about the hat. If you have a hook, you can hang your hat. If there's no hook on the wall and you go to hang your hat, it falls on the floor. The same with the concept. If there's no I am somebody else to whom a concept can stick, because you know yourself in a real sense, then there's no sticky concepts. And the conviction is, accept your selfless self. There's no God, no Brahman, no Paramatman, no Master. Nothing is there. Because you're not a thing. And the world of name and form appears upon your spontaneous presence. And presence is formless. If at all you want to compare, compare yourself to sky or space. Maharaj would also say, remove the body and then talk with me. And that's the same as saying, don't try to figure out through mind, ego, intellect.
Mm-hmm.
Remove the body and then talk with me.
Yeah, sometimes, John, I feel, you know, when I'm overly trying to understand with the mind, with the ideas, right? I am entertaining myself with this spirituality now, instead of, you know, movies or something.
Yeah, if you try to figure things out with the mind, it's okay to a point, but we're all past that point now. You know that you're formless. So all the books are telling you, basically, you're formless. Now you need direct experience. Direct experience, remaining with your selfless self. Continuing to concentrate on the concentrator until the concentrator dissolves within the concentration. The attention is released from the source of attention, very, very deep, and then a release. And you're just here. But there's no concept of somebody being here. There's no concept I am a body. There's seeing but no seer. Witnessing but no witness. Nothing is deliberate. It's all spontaneous. And just as tonight, if one of the dream characters dies, the other dream characters are moving around quite nicely. So you can say, well, the dream consciousness is no longer animating that dream character, but all the other dream characters are being animated as well.
Sometimes I try to figure out what is the definition of spontaneous. And the closest thing I could sort of come up with is it's self-existing.
Well, spontaneous, again, the best example is pick up the water, drink it, put it down. That's a spontaneous action. You're not thinking about it. Whereas Maharaj would say, have a cup of tea. And then a couple of hours later, you're not thinking about the cup of tea. You know, yesterday you probably performed 100,000 spontaneous actions. And there were only a few that you took the doership role with and said, I did XYZ or I did this. Yeah. But in reality, there were a couple thousand spontaneous actions probably occurring. Such as breathing.
It's the ones that have the self attached that are not spontaneous.
Exactly.
I mean, at least according to definition.
Well, the ownership or the doership, instead of breathing just going on, like in the middle of the night, you're not thinking, oh, I'm breathing. I need to count my breaths and make sure I breathe, or otherwise I won't wake up tomorrow. That would be a terrible night's sleep. So these are spontaneous actions. I am breathing, but now I'm breathing, so it's an action that I'm performing. In reality, it's a spontaneous action. Breathing is occurring. There's no need to have a sense of doership to breathing, or even more, digesting. Okay, I had dinner tonight. Now I'm digesting my dinner. What is that? What are you doing?
That's Kinder Jana earlier. In the middle of the night, you know, thinking yeah. that I am.
How can I say I am digesting? What am I doing to digest? Digestion is occurring. I don't need to slap the label I am digesting because it's just happening. It's a spontaneous action.
I always like to tell people you didn't put yourself here.
Yeah, I mean, well, you can't put yourself anywhere. You clicked with this specific body and said, oh, I'm John. Well, actually, I didn't say I'm John. Mom and Dad labeled this body John and then said, good job, John. Bad job, John. The sense of doership was there. I am doing good things. I am doing bad things. I have a life. Uh-oh, look at other people. They can die. Yikes, that means I die. Well, what happens to me after I die? And it's just illusion, illusion, illusion. So we erase all that illusion and remain with our selfless self. Refreshing your memory that all this is illusory, only you are. Oh, and spontaneous action, it is now 8:12. Okay. We are spontaneously ending.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Chai Guru.
You guys.
Thank you.